Leadership never ends. It's like a ripple effect. You throw that rock out there, it hits the water, it creates one ripple. There's a ripple that comes after it. There's a ripple that comes after that. That's the impact that you have on people. I've had some awesome leaders, and I've had some awesome followers. And those followers are leaders. Now, I'm forever grateful for this dude's friendship. And the further he goes, the happier I get. It's just, it's awesome because he's a badass guy. And he's doing some badass things. And he didn't forget where he came from. And I believe that's one of the biggest things is no matter where you go, you never forget where you started. And that's another reason why I'm very proud of this dude and his wife, Ash. So, Will Stimson, much love, my brother. Hope you guys enjoy the podcast. And have a happy holiday, Merry Christmas, Hanukkah, Flying Spaghetti Monster, Pastafarian, whatever they do. Happy spaghetti sauce, I guess. I don't know. But anyways, yeah, let's dig it. Start that CB song. Once again, without further ado and no more technical difficulties, yeah, so there's that. Cool. That's the podcast. Did you have fun?
Yeah, it's great.
All right, sweet. Friends, fans, followers, leaders, and true believers, I am here with...
William Stimson.
William Stimson. He and I worked together once upon a time in an amphibious construction battalion 2 in beautiful Virginia Beach, Virginia. And he was a steel worker, same job as I had, you know, and then SW1... crossed over to the officer side of the world. And that's one of the reasons why I wanted to have you on here. Usually I start with, hey, where did you start from? Instead of doing that, I would really like to ask you about how did you transition from enlisted to officer? And then we can talk about where you came from later. But, you know, okay. So that way people don't want to listen to your whole story. You can be like, fuck this guy. You know? No,
yeah, you can tune out right away, actually.
Yeah. No,
let's see. So when I actually cross-rated to MA... through the Bees to Badges program, which we can talk about that as a whole different process. But I was doing my bachelor's degree with TA while I was in. And actually, if you didn't know, if you're using TA right now, it's like 5 or 6 classes a year. But for 4 years straight, you can claim the American Opportunity Act on your taxes. So if you do come out of pocket, you know, whatever cost is throughout that year, that's over TA. You can get that funded back to you through taxes. So if you want to expedite your bachelor's degree, highly encourage you look into that option.
So tuition assistance, like all the rest of the stuff, that TA is what's tuition assistance. And then so that with that, like, how do you file that? That's just like one of the line items with your taxes?
For tuition assistance or for
No, for the...
Oh, okay. So yeah, basically you'll input your school information and it'll say... tuition that was not funded by scholarship, right?
Wow. This is something I've never heard of before. That's pretty awesome, man.
Yeah. So I did that. I think I utilized it for about 3 years. I can't remember exact if it was a full refund or if it was a percentage. Like I said, you have to look into it if you're interested. But it did assist with, you know, getting my degree a lot faster than sitting there waiting for 5 classes a year.
Yeah, it's like my grandparents would say, it's better than a kick in the pants. But you know what I mean? Because, you know, especially when you're hard charging, you're trying to move on. And I remember while you were on the active duty side, when we were at the FIB together, you were doing personal trainer type classes.
Right.
So did those classes that you did then count towards like maybe electives or something like that later? Or did you have to take a full course load going from enlisted to officer?
So basically those classes for like, I went through NASM. It's like a private or an individual personal training certification. So it didn't apply to like college credits.
Okay.
I will say that there's a lot of colleges out there that take your electives and based on your military experience, they'll apply that towards your electives. So when you're going for an associate's or a bachelor's, the school may say, hey, just based off of your military experience, here's 30 credits.
Gotcha.
And then you're looking at only have to do another 30 for your associates.
Yeah, because like the smart transcript, I don't know what it's called now, but
the JST.
Okay, so yeah, it's Joint Service
training something. I'm not sure exactly what it stands for, but
yeah, it's basically yeah. the thing that says you got all these college credits and then JS list, and it has a different fucking, I don't know, but anyways, which is cool because all the classes you do in boot camp and everything realistically counts as credits and stuff.
Yeah.
So. Then I remember when you went, was it Rhode Island that you went to school or
for OCS?
Yeah.
Yeah. Rhode Island, Newport.
Okay, so what's the process, the packages? And I know you had some difficulty with some NCs trying to cross over. And no offense to NCs, except for some of you guys fucking suck. But most of you guys do your job. There's a disclaimer for the ones yeah. that don't want to hate us.
Yeah.
If you're mad at us, then we're like you.
Yeah, no, every time I went into admin to talk to the NC at the time, basically it was like, hey, here's the commissioning instruction. Here's the commissioning instruction, right? I think it's like the 1620 something, right? But the thing is, the commissioning instruction or the officer instruction, when you're trying to go through that, it's very at the surface level of detail. So you're not going to get into the weeds. And basically the Navy HR website does a great job of going in there, going into the commissioning programs. And there's a thing called program authorizations. That's the thing you really got to pay attention to, because that's going to highlight, you know, age groups, you know, U.S. citizen, not a U.S. citizen, all the way. Like, I think when I was looking at supply at one point, it was like you can't have more than 8 years of active duty. So,
oh, wow.
Just based on that, I was like, oh, you got to get a waiver for that, or you just don't do it. Like, gotcha. So program authorizations is the big thing. And ownership of your own package is crucial, because like I said, the NCs, they can try to help you, point you in the right direction, but a lot of it is just legwork on your own and getting out there, networking, talking to people, and really utilizing people who have went through the program and through the application process to look at their packages and stuff.
It just has to be like just to retire was a pain in the ass.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, yeah. They didn't even give me the right thing. It was like John and Kim O'Brien. They've been divorced since I was 6 years old, dude.
Yeah.
But anyways, that's another complaint for another time. We'll do a whole show on that. And so you get accepted, and what's your next step?
Yeah, I actually ran into a hiccup. So it was funny because, you know, I think at the time I was year 13 and a half, 14 years in the Navy at this point. And they actually denied me medically right away.
Oh, wow.
And they said that they had more questions. So I actually missed the first board review based on a letter that was sent, but we never received it.
I remember there was a thing.
I think that was back in August, at August timeframe. So then I ended up having to go back, and they wanted, instead of the questionnaire, medical questionnaire and sheets for the physical and stuff, they wanted the last 5 years of my medical record. So I had to scan all that in, which, by the way, you can go to medical, and at any given time, you can get a PDF of your medical record. So if you're just curious, you know what it is, you can get it electronically, and then you can review everything, make sure everything's in your medical record. This is really important if you're looking at possible retirement soon and you're not sure what's in there. So just know that you always have that option as well.
Well, and then also, I'm glad you said that about the medical record, because here's like one of those asterisks for another thing. Here's the asterisk for retirement. So like, if you're like, because when you came in, you still had a paper record.
Yeah.
So once again, like when you go to retire, you and then you guys that are and gals that are still like active and stuff, make sure when you get that, take it, copy it one-sided. Don't two-sided, one-sided. Because think of it like this. There's an upset E1 who has to scan all your stuff in. Yeah. So he might not, or she might not flip it. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So get one-sided, all that other stuff. And then also when you go to file for when you get out and you retire or whatever, you do that. You separate your mental health from your regular record, and they have two separate things when you turn them in. And a lot of times too, people don't realize that their mental health part isn't specifically with the regular record.
Right.
You know what I mean? So that's just, you know, for future references for you ladies and gentlemen, and for you too, well, you know, just, you know, hopefully you're not too crazy when you get out.
I mean,
it's kind of hard sometimes, especially the kids these days, whippersnappers.
Yeah.
Okay, so like the medical thing kicked you, you're good?
Yeah, no, and then basically as soon as I finished that process, you know, I found out that I picked up, I actually, you know, was an MA1 at the time after going to the BZ badges. Yeah.
For those who don't know, MA is Master in Arms, Navy Cop. So you're doing
Navy Cop.
We're from CB to Master in Arms, Navy Cop, and then now you got picked up.
Yeah. And, you know, so I actually got slammed with orders. Right before. So about 2 weeks before, I got slammed with unaccompanied orders to Bahrain. And they were like, hey.
Oh, boy.
You know. Here you go. And I was like, oh man, this sucks, you know? But then I found out I picked up for OCS, and then that was probably the best email I ever got to send to a detailer.
I bet.
Saying, hey, thanks for slamming me on orders, but yeah, I'm not going to do that. So, yeah. I found out.
How do you say very respectfully, go fuck yourself?
Yeah. No, so that was rewarding in itself. But on top of that, you know, getting accepted was awesome. I found out in December. I submitted my package, got reviewed in December. I found out in January, and then I went to OCS in February. So it was a very quick class up and turnaround.
That's
and then
awesome.
If you do have questions, there's a Air Warriors forum that everybody uses. So if you get a class date or you do get picked up, go to Air Warriors. It's an open forum, and you can actually search for OCS classes, or you can search for other people applying for supply, SWO, Intel, any of those. And then you can talk to other people that are in the application process.
Nice.
So it's a good open forum to be able to talk to people on there too.
So is there like any like Facebook groups like that too that are... I mean, because the cool thing is, like, I'm retired, so I'm stuck in first class land for life, because that's where I retired at. You know what I mean? So there's always, like, first class forums and stuff like that. So I was saying, like, JOs or SWOs or, like, any, like, Facebook groups you'd recommend people to check into as well? Or?
Honestly, there's a bunch of different ones to look at. But the best one that I actually really enjoy is Basic Mentoring. So if you go to the Basic Mentoring Facebook page, that one... If you have any type of question, they always put new nav admins, things like that. And then obviously just follow Navy Advancement Center, Navy HR, because they always put out the newest editions of everything that's coming out. So
I think, what was that YN who was with us at the FIB? As a matter of fact, he reenlisted at Six Flags. We had to get on the ride, and then he reenlisted on the biggest ride there or whatever. Anyways, long story short, I think he's one of the guys behind that Basic Mentoring page.
Oh, really?
Huh. Yeah, and then he like picked up. He was a YN1, picked up YNC like a little bit after he left. His wife is also active duty Navy. Good people. Anyway, yeah, that Basic Mentoring page is pretty cool.
Yeah,
and it's funny too because then every once in a while you get the like. Really bravado people, and then they get shot down pretty quick. It's like, come on, man, be realistic, dude.
Yeah,
you know, which is Basic Mentoring, good page for the Navy. So where are you at next?
So I mean, OCS is a beast in itself. So when you actually do go there,
Officer Candidate School, right?
Yeah. Officer Candidate School. I unfortunately was 32 years old when I went through it, so it was a little bit more difficult. I'm sure everyone that's in their 30s can relate to what that's like. But basically, I will say, in comparison to boot camp, I think OCS is a little more difficult. You get a little more freedoms, but and like I said, it could be because I was 32, or you know, it could actually just be a little bit more difficult. But it's unique because it's in three phases, right? So the first, you know, 3.5 weeks or whatever is basically you just getting drilled down by you know, two RDCs, which is typical for Navy boot camp, but you also have a Marine DI
as one of your
instructors.
Commanders and then a drill instructor.
And,
so,
of note, every RDC and every DI, the prerequisite to getting into OCS is that you have to have been at recruit training command or, you know, at boot camp for the Marines, right? So it's not their first rodeo doing this.
Yeah.
And a lot of them are, you know, super good. They pick the cream of the crop to come out and train the officers and train in the future. So
basically, if you're first class or second class, somebody watching this, chief, whomever, and you're watching this and you had that career at one point as an RDC or drill instructor,
yeah,
you could do that again later on, but for officers and stuff. That's cool, man.
Exactly. Yeah. But yeah, so like I said, and then it goes into like basically, you know, school mode, right?
Right.
Where you're in there, you're doing a lot of classroom hours. You're still getting beat a little bit, but a lot of it's like just, you know, learning Navy stuff, right? And there's a lot of stuff that I was learning that I didn't know before, right?
Well, especially since like our background is Seabees, and it's like very unfortunate. Like, you know, yes, hey man, what ship are you on? It's like, dude, you know.
Yeah, yeah, I know. I dreaded anything fleet side, being on ships or whatever. Mm-hmm. Always heard the horror stories, but I'll tell you what, I actually do enjoy it. It's pretty
fun. I'm not saying it's good or bad. I'm just saying it's funny how ignorant we are about fleet.
Yeah,
because it's just like, hey man, what ship were you on? You're like, I don't know, dude. Like, I know there's one called the O'Briens, or used to be, you know.
Yeah, exactly.
Used to be by the Blue Ridge in Yokosuka. Now I have no clue. You know, that's as much as we know about ships. We drive by them.
And it's funny that you say the Blue Ridge, because that's like the flagship, right?
Yeah.
So that's like...
the flagship was like the Yokosuka one, and O'Brien's used to be parked right next to it. And that's the only reason why I knew, is I had a recruit that was on the Blue Ridge.
Oh, okay.
And he told me a story about the O'Brien's. I was like, give me a hat. And he never did. Bastard.
That's funny. But yeah, so after you get through the schooling phase, you know, just going to class and stuff like that... And I don't even get me started on the chow hall procedures. That's just ridiculous. It takes you know, like chow's, you know, an
sounds
hour
like
long.
You got yourself started on it.
Yeah, I know.
All right, so chow's an hour long.
Oh, yeah. But you only sit down to eat for 15, 20 minutes of that.
Okay.
So the rest of it is all strict procedure on how to enter the chow hall. Like,
really?
It's just something that if you're ever in Newport, Rhode Island, you just got to go to the galley during lunch. And you just have to see the OCS guys go through there. It's something to just watch.
I'm down. Yeah. Like, my buddy Dooley's up there. I want to go say hi to my buddy. He's the mass chief up in Rhode Island. No. Yeah, he's in Rhode Island as an instructor. Go say hi to him.
Yeah. But, yeah, so then then you get into, like, what we call the Candio phase. And that's where the difference.
What's Candio mean? What's
it's that? Just Candid Officer, right?
Oh, okay, cool. So I didn't
know. The big difference between Navy boot camp and OCS is in the Candid Officer phase of OCS. That's where they put you in charge of all the new indocs coming in. So instead of you being in like P days and having, you know, RDC instructors and other chiefs around, and they're kind of, hey, go to dental. Hey, do this. No, this is all students that coordinate that. They coordinate bus trips to dental. They get you through the dental line.
Gotcha.
And it teaches you the leadership aspect of being an officer and making things happen and coordination and stuff like that.
So this is basically like being a class leader, but for...
Yeah. So your last 3 weeks at OCS is you... the first week is you training the new classmates, right?
Right.
Or the new indocs. How to learn the basics to get through the first 3 weeks of getting beat down, right? And then after that first week, it transitions. Like, you'd never guess what my job was for, you know, the last 3 weeks of me at OCS. What do you think it was?
Cleaning the restroom.
No, I was the facilities manager.
Oh, okay.
And I'm telling you, and I'm telling you, like, I got in and I wrote jobs, right? For the senior chief, I forget his last name, but he was in charge of the work center, in charge of getting these jobs done. But yeah, I'm going into the system and writing jobs, so walking around saying, hey, this is broke, and we need a job in for it. Like, they're teaching you stuff like that at OCS, you know. Like, so I mean, it's just like I said, it's a unique experience. I actually failed one of the evolutions. I got rolled back by 3 weeks. Maybe I was enjoying too many energy drinks and burritos at the Moody's trucks that I didn't make the cut on one of them. But you know, like I said, it's a little bit more physically demanding, and you actually do some rifle drill in there as well. So you're doing some pretty cool stuff.
So do you feel like the stuff that you learned helped a lot, or did you have to unlearn a lot of things? Because a lot of times procedures and evolutions change. It's like when we go back to battalion, or you go back to a command you were with once before, it's like, oh, well, back in my day, we used to... Yeah, well, we don't do that anymore that way.
So I think it's a little bit different as far as, you know, some of the stuff that I took away from it was just kind of the level of expectation right out, like going, you know, right into it, right? So as soon as you check into a new job as an officer, that level of expectation is way different than being, you know, E1 out of boot camp.
Yeah,
right?
Definitely.
You know, you're immediately placed in charge of people. You're immediately in a management role. So a lot of the schooling that leads up to that point is, you know, teaching you that. One of the things they teach all the officers is, hey, you know, you really want to be close to the division. You really want to be close to your guys and stuff like that. But at the end of the day, you're a policy writer, right? And officers write policy. And then, you know, your chief and your LPO and everybody, they're the ones that are enforcing the policy, right? And yeah. I'm not saying that an ensign out there is just, you know, writing policy for the Navy, right? But this is years of grooming from an ensign all the way up to, you know, through lieutenant commander up to captain and above. Like, they are the policymakers for the Navy. And,
oh, yeah.
And it starts out at the lowest level, obviously. It's just a different yeah. level, you know? So.
And then for those captains, a colonel. Like, it's funny, for people that are Army and Marine Corps, when we're talking captains, we're talking about colonels.
Yeah, full berths. You know? Full berths, yeah. Yeah.
So it's like, it's funny because, like, the whole rank structure, I think I sent you that meme yesterday. It was like an E5 Air Force guy shaking hands with an E5 Navy guy, and it's like, hey, nice to meet yeah. you. And it's like, I have no idea what your rank exactly. is.
Well, I remember, so my first command was at Camp David.
Oh,
and,
all right.
Which we can get into that. But I remember going to Fort Detrick, which is an Army base, right? And I'm rocking my third class crow, right?
Dude, yes.
And I'm walking around this Army base, and I'm over and I'm shopping. Like, I'm just looking at, like, PT gear, and this guy, like, he walks up to me and goes, excuse me, sir. And I'm like, what?
Yeah, right.
I'm a 19-year-old kid, right? And he's walking up to me. He's like, aren't you a little young to be like a full bird? And I'm like, what are you? And that's what I was like, oh, no, man, this is wrong.
Yeah. Like, no, it's hilarious because I remember when I was in Pohang, Korea, we were on Camp Walker.
I was there as well.
Yeah, so you know, like, you know how it is. So we went from Pohang, went to Camp Walker, was Daegu. Uh-huh. And the same thing. I'm like 22 years old and somebody salutes me and I'm like, what's going on? This is awkward, dude.
Yeah.
And CE3 Salazar gets saluted as well. And I'm like, dude, we are like the, and it's funny you said that. Cause like, we're the youngest captains there are. And I remember the first time I saw a specialist insignia and I was like, do I salute that? Is that, I don't know what that is.
Yeah,
because
it's just weird. You're like, just a, like, almost looks like a triangle, right?
Yeah, it's like,
you're like, what is that?
It looks like baseball, like a baseball diamond, like the infield of baseball. You're like, what the hell is the infield of baseball doing? Is that a, I don't remember studying that.
Yeah.
So like OCS, you're in charge of the place. And then you tell
So then I graduate, right? And then there's like a whole, you know, process that comes after that. You know, your basic division officer course is a BDOT course, you know, that you got to go through. And that's just, you know, force feeding knowledge with a fire hose, basically. It's PowerPoint, PowerPoint, test, PowerPoint, PowerPoint. And then, you know, and then there's some other stuff sprinkled in there as well. But, and then, you know, you go to your first ship, you go to your first command, and, you know, for SWOs, at least for me, your first command is, 30 months of C, and then you'll go to a second tour, which I'm about to go to. And then that's another 18 months.
That's cool, man, too. It's like, you're going to like a brand new ship and all that. But before we get into that, I want to ask this though. If you were going to go do this all over again, or you have a friend, like say like MA1 so-and-so or SW1 so-and-so,
right,
and they're like, hey man, I'm crossing over, what advice would you give them?
It's crossing over to officer or
crossing over to officer.
My advice, that I wish I did was start early. Right. So, you know, I started TA at, you know, 19, and then I went a couple years without ever touching it. Right. But if you're truly trying to go the officer route, which there's other routes, there's State 21, there's LDO, there's so many other options out there. But if you're the person that's working on your bachelor's degree because you want a leg over, you know, start that early. You know, utilize those resources that you have available to get it done. And then on top of that, State 21, remember you got to take an SAT. Right, which is everybody knows what a SAT ACT is, right? So there's minimum standards you got to get with that. But also, if you're going to be an officer for any other thing, supply, SWO, things like that, You have to take what we call an OER exam, right?
What's that? What's OER?
So it's just an officer aptitude rating exam, right? Okay. It's basically the ASVAB, right? But you have to take it because there's minimum standards for every designation that you want to get into. And that sometimes can be, you know, 6 months booked out. So I have a couple guys that I was just working with over here in San Diego. The testing center is on Point Loma, which if anybody wants to reach out, they can reach out to me. I have those points of contacts. But you reach out over there, it's about 3 to 6 months, depending on the year, on the time of year. But you got to take that. And then that test is good for 3 years.
Okay.
So if you are, if you know that you're going to be passing your, you know, bachelor's degree here within the next year or so, definitely take the OER now. So that way, as soon as you graduate, that's not another thing that you got to wait 6 months to be able to take.
Yeah. Just get that knocked out now. I think that was like, I forget how long, I think the ASVAB was like 3 years. I don't know. It's been so long, but it's either 24 or 36 months. But yeah, it's one of those things where it's like good to freaking have. And it's over with too. So
yeah.
Would you advise people to just take it anyway?
So here's the thing. When you take it, that's your score for good.
Forever?
And then you could take it again, but I think you only get up to like three tries.
All right.
So after three, that's like, that's your best. That's the only one they're going to take. Right.
Gotcha.
You know, of note, there are prep, books and things like that that you can look at so you can study up on it. And then also, you know, let's say you take it and you score whatever. If you want to take it again, you can. But if you score lower on the second time, they're going to take the lower score. It's not like the best out of the three.
Okay, cool. Because that's the reason why I was asking is because a lot of times I'd have an applicant when I was in the Navy recruiter, 02 to 05 recruited in Ohio, and I'd have an applicant and they did it and study hall at Vanguard Vocational Center, and they're like, right. Well, we all had to be there, and I don't care. And they're, you know, freaking still hungover from, because they're teenagers. You know what I mean? Like, they're still like hungover from the weekend, and they don't care, and they abacabbed the whole thing. Like, yeah, this is a Christmas tree. And then, you know, they get back, and their ASVAB score is 12, but it's like, no, we're really good. Or they had a really decent ASVAB score, but they felt like they grew a lot in like a year or two, and their line scores didn't match up for the job they wanted. And then it would be like the most current. That would be your, that would be what you're going with. Not like, you know, there's no average. It was just like, all right, cool. So you did it this month, and then you did it like, what is, I think it's 1 month, 1 month, 6 months. I don't know. They change all that stuff. But if you've messed up, I think you can do it a month. And then a month later, and then after that, you had to wait 6 months.
Yeah.
It's like three strikes, and you're out for half a year or some weird stuff. But
yeah, and if you're, you know, if you are my situation, like, you know, even I think my junior year of high school, I took my ASVAB score. So
right.
The end of your senior year, you should go retake the ASVAB. Cause
yeah, if you're definitely. There's
a, I'm not saying there's a learning curve or whatever, but let's just say, like, you know, I think I scored a 42 on my ASVAB, my initial ASVAB.
Right.
And hey, I qualified for SW, so I never went and I never retook it, right? Because I thought SW was, you know, that's what I wanted to do, right?
Right.
So I didn't care. But if you do care, and if you're looking at other options, or you want to become a nuke or something like that, like, do the prep work ahead of time, so you're not just, you know, hey, you get to be a CB, or you get to be a CS, or you get to be, you know, some rates that you don't necessarily want to be. But those are your only options.
So. And I hate breaking CB's hearts when I say this, but a steelworker is not that hard to get. Like, it's hard to get the availability for a steelworker because there's only like 600 of us at any given time on active duty. But that's about it. And that's the thing, too, with the ASVABs and the line scores is, like, you go in and you don't realize what you qualify for, what you don't qualify for. And then but you can just Google shit. You can like Google what's the line scores I need for this. And then if you look at it, like AR is, you know, arithmetic reasoning, VK is verbal knowledge, MK is math knowledge. Everything has different like two letters, which basically means something. And then for specific jobs, you add those numbers together. It's like, okay, so you got to have this and it has to equal 140. Mm-hmm. And you add these three things together. And it's like, oh, that's it. And so, which is cool now is a lot of the young folks, or if you're, because I do have people that like watch the show or listen to the podcast that are thinking about going in, and then they use a lot of this for basis for late. That's why a lot of times too, I'm like, tuition assistance?
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Because It's funny because when you talk to some comms dudes without going deep in the paint on that, they'll be like, yeah, we had the OE-254, hooked it up to the 119, to the OE-2. I'm like, bro. Nobody knows what an Anger 39 is, especially in this day and age.
And there is a new nav admin out that just came within the last maybe 3 months, I would say, on tuition assistance. So if you haven't read that yet, I forget the numbers, but there is, and it's posted on the Navy HR web, on the Facebook page. So you can go in there and get the new nav admin and on the website, but read that too. Cause you know, even for sailors that are still in, I think it's now instead of 1 year in, you have to have 2 years in.
Okay.
And you know, it approved 6 classes now instead of 5 classes. So definitely some changes there that should definitely look at.
And that's another thing too, for it's forever evolving, you know, because I remember like when I came in T8, nobody was ever using it. So it's kind of like the Wild West, you know, it's basically like, yeah, we got whatever you want to do, you know, and it's kind of like that because nobody was going to college. And then it wasn't as pressed, you know, now it's like college is a big thing. I mean, just for every job, just to know a job a lot of times,
or they send if you're you to even trying to make chief. I think a lot of people that are getting selected for chief or they got bachelor's degrees and
specific career paths are like that too. Yeah. Like if you're, you know, not going to be able to get to the schoolhouse, that's one thing the board will understand. But if you're like in an administrative job, especially in an administrative job where you have the opportunity and possibility to go to college, then freaking take it up. You know, I'm not trying to tell you how to live your life. I'm just trying to make it better.
I wish I would have started earlier.
There's some things where in hindsight, there's like, man, I probably should have done that.
Yeah.
But, you know, that's definitely, it's definitely an easy factor to kick yourself in the butt. But the cool thing is that's why I love doing this is we can pass that on to the sentry that relieves us. See, that's command. It's a general order there.
The sixth one, right?
Yeah. No, that's to receive, obey, and pass on. Sentry relieves us all. Commanders, commanding officer, commanding officer, officer, deck officers, and petty officers, watch only. Yeah, that's right. It is the sixth general order.
Yeah.
All right.
The longest one.
Exactly. The best part. All right. Here's the cheat code for general orders. Just know the sixth one.
Yeah.
If you know the sixth one, everybody's like, oh, I'm impressed. You know all your stuff. Then you'd be like, you don't know. I have to know the rest.
They're the funny part's when people memorize the sixth one, but then they get asked the fifth, and it's the shortest one, and they can't say it because they don't know it.
To relieve my post. Properly relieved. That's it. Yeah. I was like, it's been a minute.
Yeah.
See? Told you. Know the sixth.
Yeah.
Know the sixth, then plead the fifth.
Nice.
So, like, all right. Anything you want to put out there on TA or college programs, anything like that, that you think would be beneficial?
No, like I said, I think we highlighted the big things. And then outside of that is finding a mentor and finding someone that's been through the process so they can help you out.
That's a big thing in the pride too. It's like, don't be afraid to ask other people for help. You know what I mean? Like, it doesn't matter. You know, like right now, you're mentoring me and you're in my troop. You know, and that's what I love about how the Navy continuously works. Like, you're mentoring me on how I can help other people further themselves.
Right.
And that's how it works, especially in community when it's just like, all right, well, what do I do to make my these troops advance? So like the now where are you going to? Where'd you go directly after school?
After school, I became the Combat Information Center officer on USS Princeton. It's a cruiser. So they do the air defense ship for the strike group. Right. So the strike group we're attached to was the Nimitz strike group. I'm sure everybody heard how that went during COVID. 11-month deployment.
No, people haven't. Like, that's what's crazy, dude.
Oh, man. Yeah, so...
You got to tell about that shit.
Yeah, so we, left out of San Diego. We did some training exercises, and they were basically like, hey, COVID's thing. You know, you're not going to go back home. You're just going to stay in the bubble on the ship. So stayed in the bubble, and then we deployed right away. We had some record-setting days at seas. Days at sea. But basically, I think over the span of the 11 months, well, first it was supposed to be 5 months. Then we found out it was going to be six. And then we got extended, I think 5 or 6 times total. When we were in Arabian Gulf, Fifth Fleet just wouldn't let us leave.
A lot of surf and turf.
Yeah. You guys. They just wouldn't let us leave. There was no, replacement to be able to come out. Basically, 5 month deployment turned into 11 months. And in that span of 11 months, I think we had four ports, but every time we turned into a port, we were restricted to the pier. So we just bought some beer and...
Oh, okay. So you could at least like get off the boat, stretch your legs a little bit.
You get off the boat onto the concrete pier, and then you sit in a chair for however long you want to drink a beer, and then you go back to the boat. Like those were our off days.
Dude.
And, you know, on a ship, when you pull into port, it's usually three-section duty. So if you have... Yeah. If you're in port for 3 days, a day of that is standing watch, standing duty, and then you get to 2 days.
Oh, dude, you know, what ports did you pull into but not be able to see?
When we went to Guam was our first stop.
Okay.
But there we got restricted to the pier, but we could take the duty van over, like shuttles, over to the beach, and we could swim in the ocean.
Oh, okay. But, yeah, that's like where the time lock.
So we just went to the oceans and swam for the day and came back and then did like beer in the pier.
Damn.
And then after that, we didn't stop. So that was Guam. We went all through, the Philippines, through the Strait of Malacca, which is crazy when you're driving a ship. And then Indian Ocean, did some exercises. Well, backtrack. We did the South China Sea, did some exercises there, some dual carrier ops with two carriers and stuff like that. So that was pretty cool. I think we pulled into port finally a few months later. We went to Duqm in Oman. The only thing they had was good fried chicken. That was just beer on a pier. And then they even did a whole bunch of like Connex boxes lined out. Yeah. So that way nobody could get through. Like it was just this big wall. Right.
Wow.
So we were there for 4 days. And then we went to Bahrain, cause we went in Arabian Gulf. We were there that's where we got stuck. Right. So, I think we did Bahrain twice. So we did four ports, over the span of 11 months and
the only people happy are some people's wives. You know what I mean?
Like, yeah.
They're like, oh, you went to the Philippines. I was the Philippines. Beer on the pier.
But you know, I would say, you know, they tell you every deployment's different and I've done quite a few deployments and this one, while being gone for a long period of time, the quality of life to me was still okay. You know, I had a rack. I still had meals three times a day. It's not like,
You had good people you were with then.
There's some good people, some people you don't necessarily get along with, but you tolerate, you know? Yeah. I mean, that's just standard, right?
Yeah, my running joke is there's a lot of people out there I'd take a bullet for, but I never want to see again. You know what I mean? It's just like, that's just kind of like how it is. It's just, you know, fuck these people, but you know what? They're my brothers.
Yeah.
You know, so. Man, that had been a trip, man. So you get back and then you get called for orders you were like thinking about getting out, and then your skipper's like, no. You're sticking around, homie.
Well, no, I was always going to be sticking around for first and second tour, which my second tour is going to be a navigator.
Yeah.
If I make it through the training.
No, I'm talking about, you're thinking about leaving San Diego.
Oh, leaving San Diego.
You're like, thinking about leaving San Diego. And you're like, no, you're staying in San Diego.
Well, I did. So we were thinking about like going to Europe and stuff like that, but... based on the orders, the selection, and the job opportunity, there was just more opportunity to stay here. And you know, with, you know, the baby on the way and stuff like that, it was just,
once again, congratulations.
Thank you. Yeah. But why uproot the house, so to speak, for 18 months, right? Like if you're really looking at it, grand scheme of thing, 18 months, is it really worth packing up everything you own to move somewhere, especially Europe for 18 months. So we talked it over, talking about shore duty possibly to go to Europe for the 3 years versus 18 months, you know? So.
And my buddy, Derek Patterson, who's with these guys over SEAL Team 5, he was like, dude, every time I go to Port Hueneme, man, it's the worst place. Cause his family lives here. He lives here and he'd commute cause we're in Battalion 3 together. And he'd come back, every time I come up here, man, you know, fuck this place.
Yeah.
But then it's the San Diego so nice. And I didn't realize it because I never really spent much time down here. I had like a Corman girlfriend. I was a third. She was a second. And I'd come down and visit her. And that was it. And I go right back up. But really, San Diego, this place is so beautiful, man. It's like one of the nicest cities in the world. San Diego is the Canada of the United States. Or at least the Canada of California, I should say. Everybody's like polite. It's really nice, you know, for the most part. Unless you're downtown, where they'll still stab you because they're meth fiends. But anyway, yeah, I can see why you'd want to stay here. You know, and good old Coronado. Now you're not Coronado, but good old freaking San Diego. So, yeah. Heck yeah, man.
Yeah.
So you got a bunch of schools coming up, and then you're going to go to like one a new ship or something? Or
yeah, so I was on a cruiser, and now I'm going to be going to an LCS, which is a littoral combat ship. I'm going from a crew size of, well, it's a, in the hundreds, right?
Yeah.
To a crew size of not so much.
Ladies and gentlemen, remember, this show is uncensored, with the exception of OPSEC.
Yeah.
So there's people and things on this boat.
there's stuff that, let's just say the level of responsibility is higher.
Right.
And, you know, it's uniquely different the way it operates too, right? Talking about adding different features and different capabilities, different speeds, right?
Yeah.
The training pipeline is longer for that specifically. So we're looking at, from January until, August timeframe, I'm going to be in school.
And then the whole time you're in school, does that count towards your orders or does that count to school?
No. So that's, as soon as you check out and you're supposed to go to your 18-month sea duty, right?
Right.
Well, that 18-month sea time doesn't start until you check into the next ship. Good. So, which gotcha. Is, it's good and bad, right? So
yeah,
if you're looking at my world, if the ship's, scheduled for deployment and we'll say, we'll make something up and say September, right? Because I get back in August, right?
Yeah.
Well, if you're looking at it from January to August, I'm away from my family because family's in San Diego. I'm in school in Rhode Island. Yeah. Then you come back in August and then the ship goes on deployment for 6 months. Now you're looking at almost a year without your family because of the way the timelines worked out. So,
That's definitely got to be difficult. Well, the cool thing though is that your family's here and then like with the schoolings, usually your BAH is from your last command, so you're still keeping your money here. You're going to go to school in Rhode Island, then you're coming back here.
Yeah,
so it's
exactly.
Like,
yeah.
Because I've seen some people get really shafted, you know what I mean? Like,
They'll
be in like where we were, Virginia Beach, and then they'll be like someplace super expensive, like here, and it's like, your family's already there, and it's like you're losing money out your butthole. Because
I know some people get away with doing the Geo Bachelor thing, but I was told like they started to go away with from that,
really?
Right? And in the Geo Bachelor, it's like usually you have, it's like one resident advisor for the barracks, right? But if the guy just checked in and he's already got it, like he's going to be keeping that for probably almost your duration, So
for those that don't know what Geo Bachelor is, like your family's say like your family's in here in Coronado, but you have orders to Norfolk. So you're in Norfolk. And you still are, like, your family's still here. They're taken care of. But you're staying in the barracks there. And that's kind of like how the Geo Match works. Where it's like you have two places to live. You have a house where your family is, and you have the house there. And I could see why they're trying to, when, I don't want to turn this into a political thing, but I'll just say, like, sometimes there are certain people that like to take the money away from the military and put it somewhere else.
Yeah.
And that's when they thin the military. That's when, like, they got rid of the hobby shops, and they got rid of, like, all this other stuff that was really beneficial and saved the troops a lot of money. But, Anyway, with them getting rid of that, it really kind of sucks.
Yeah. Dang. Yeah.
All right. So there's that. And then... Where are you from originally, man?
Pennsylvania.
What part?
Outside of Philadelphia, it's Bordertown, Pennsylvania specifically, but it's about maybe an hour, 10 minutes north.
Flyers country?
Yeah, northwest of Philly. Yeah.
All right, Flyers country. Not the Pens side, it's the Flyers side of the country. That's it. And then you went in. Did you want to be? You wanted to be a steelworker,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, so originally... I remember my recruiter, which I still talk to, which
that's
most
awesome.
People don't do that, right? But
no,
my recruiter was took me up there, went up the MEPS. They're like, hey, we can make you a PR. And I was like, what's PR? Like, oh, parachute rigger. You get air pay, blah, blah, blah. And I was like, but I sew parachutes?
Yeah.
And they're like, well, yeah, but you pack them and then you get like air pay and stuff. And I was like, no, I want to get my hands dirty. Like,
right?
And then they're like, well, SW. And I was like, I'll be honest, I didn't know what SW even was when I was a recruiter. I was like, okay, steel worker, like, okay. They're like, yeah, you'll be a CB, learn a trade. I was like,
once again, what the fuck's a CB? What's a steel worker yet?
And honestly, being from Pennsylvania, I know a lot of people that were like in trade school, or they do a trade, or, you know, they've gotten out of high school and they start their own construction companies, stuff like that. So I was like, yeah, you know what? Honestly, trade is always good to have, because even if you're in, you know, the middle of nowhere, United States, right? Having a trade to be able to, one, fix your house, fix your plumbing, fix a friend's house, fix plumbing, there's always business there, right? There's not always business for, you know, big IT jobs or something like that, right? So I was like, hey, why not? I'll learn a trade, get out there, you know, do that type of stuff. And that's why I chose the CBs, you know?
Yeah, I wanted to be a Holtec HT because my cousin was an HT.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh, but that was full. So I took SW. I had no clue what it was. Same thing.
Yeah.
Like, hey, this is what you do. It's HT online. I'm like, sounds good to me. Let's make that happen.
Yeah.
You go from there, boot camp, Great Lakes, then school.
A school. And it was actually in A school that the Camp David recruiters came.
That's awesome. Yeah. Because I'm glad you said that, because I was going to ask you about that. So how'd that all work out, man?
So basically, I'm, 19 years old sitting in A school.
Yeah.
And I'm like, oh, you know, Camp David recruiters. Honestly, like, I almost kind of forgot what Camp David even was, right? Because I remember through like middle school or high school or whatever, like read about the Camp David Accords in the textbook, and I'm like, I don't know. You have no idea like where that's from, like,
right?
Like, okay, Camp David Accords. You're like, well, I don't know what the namesake is. Whatever. Well, come to find out, Camp David's an actual place, right? So they came out. They're like, yeah, you'll get to hang out with the president. At the time, was George Bush, right?
Yeah.
And I got a ton of funny stories with that.
Are they off air stories?
I got off air. I do have on air ones. Anyway, we'll say that I went to Camp David, right?
Yeah.
Did it end on good terms? No, it didn't. I ended up getting dismissed, aka kicked out, because I went to Captain's Mass. But we can all talk about that.
Yeah.
Because hey, I mean, you know, most people are like, I would say nowadays it's a little bit harder, but you know, there's definitely some growth and maturity that people have when they first join the Navy, and if you do get in trouble, it's okay.
Yeah.
Because. Right? I know at the time I was like lying through my teeth, like no, right? And it's like, I could have just been honest, you know, like just own up to it.
Well, I had a buddy of mine who had orders to go to Camp David, and they kicked him, turned him around, because he actually came in on a drug waiver, and it wasn't like he ever, you know, he never popped on piss test or anything like that. He just said, yes, I smoked weed before he came in the Navy, you know, and he had a lucrative career as a builder, still active duty now, you know, and just. They said, nope, we don't want you.
Yeah, I did. So Camp David, you know, I did fulfill the time there to be able to get the Presidential Service Badge. And George Bush liked to ride mountain bikes a lot. So
nice.
You know, when I was there, I was part of the grounds team. So I basically got to do all the landscaping. It was pretty funny. But the best times were, you know, when it would snow and you get to be in the plow truck for throughout the night. That was a good time. The bad times were, you know, when after you were done plowing, you wake up and it's 30 snow. So they, you know, Master Chief likes to send you out there and, you know, shovel halfway down and flip the snow over so it's fresh snow on top, you know.
Oh, beautiful. Yeah,
so you can make, exactly. That's what
beautiful the snow.
Beautification, right? Yeah. Mm-hmm. Beautification projects all day. So.
No, I love those camp beautifications. Yeah. CBs are notorious for making those up. And I can only imagine. I can't even imagine how crazy that would get at Camp David.
Oh, man. Can you imagine a Master Chief, you know, Command Master Chief just walking around and spotting out Mohawks? And Mohawks are, you know, you didn't overlap the lawnmower just
enough. Oh, yeah.
So there's like some blades of grass there.
I never knew it had a definition.
You'd be out there with scissors, cutting, like trimming it, right? Like,
Should I ask the Master Chief's name? Tell me after. we won't like hit him on this, man.
Well, let's just say I'm pretty sure he hated me after.
So you said you got thrown out of there. What'd you do?
Yeah, underage drinking, and then you know we had a couple of people, you know, fist fight a little, but basically, I wasn't upset that I was getting in trouble, because I was like, okay, yeah, I'm irresponsible and probably glad that the Navy caught it before civilian authorities. Right.
Yeah.
But, what drove me kind of insane, well, not insane, but annoyed, was every single chief was like, oh, if you were in battalion, like, you wouldn't be getting set up for this. It's just the nature of where you're at.
Yeah,
I was like,
totally.
What do you mean it's just the nature? I was like, it's not like, not like anybody.
So what year would you say this was? Like,
this was I got the Camp David in 2005.
Okay.
And then I would say the beginning of 2007.
Gotcha.
I got in trouble, and then that's when I went to NMCB5 and
the professionals.
Yeah. I'm gonna use this name because this guy, I feel like he changed my life. He probably doesn't know, but he might, right?
Right.
But it was Master Chief Rich. I don't know if you ever
Dale.
No, I forget his first name. But
okay,
he was a BU, right? And my first, you know how it is. You check into a new battalion, you're like lost in spaces. You're like, I don't know what I'm doing here, right? And I'll just never forget because this guy was like walking around, full Master Chief, you know, Charlie Company, walking around, and he looks at my name. And he goes, Stimson, you're the guy that got kicked out of Camp David. Come with me. And I was like, my first impression at this command, this guy already knows, right?
Yeah.
But honestly, he was the saving grace with me in battalion because I was greedy, right? And I got busted. I got busted down to E3 afterwards, and I was like, oh man. But I was getting, I had a household goods, right? And I was getting BAH.
Right.
So I checked into the battalion. I was like, hey, here's my BAH chip. Blah, blah, blah. Like, why is this E3 applying for BAH, right? And then they already knew my story, right? So right. Master Chief Rich pulled me in his office. I'll never forget it, right? I was like, hey, we're going to take this, one of two ways. Ready? Option one is you be greedy and you submit your BH shit up to the captain. And I put not recommended and I tell him your situation because the captain doesn't know. Right.
Right. Right. Right.
And he's like, or you take this chit because we're about to go on deployment and you shred it and you prove yourself on deployment and we'll revisit you getting BH after the deployment if you prove yourself. Right.
Yeah,
and I was like, I'll do that option, right?
Yeah,
and then
option B sounds
yeah.
Great.
So then that's when we went to Okinawa, went on deployment, and then obviously, like I said, I mean, yeah, I was a troublemaker, but I worked hard, and I feel like I proved myself.
Establish that hey, you're fucking responsible too, man.
Yeah,
Okinawa, and the funny thing is with Okinawa is so easy to get in trouble there too.
Oh yeah.
So if you can maintain, my first deployment, I was on liberty risk. I almost went to mass.
Yeah.
They got stopped at XOI. Like, man, it's easy to get in trouble in Okinawa, especially.
Well, I didn't stay in Okinawa the whole time too, which is beneficial, right?
That's
when I went to Pohang for that year, and then we went to Hawaii for a couple weeks on a layover, and then I actually did the continuing promise so we came down to San Diego and I got on the USS Boxer, and then we went to Guatemala, El Salvador, and Peru. And we did, humanitarian work there. And then we did the crossing line ceremony. So I got to be shell back,
What? Rare. And the cool thing is now that you're also, you're in the fleet, the real Navy, you're like, yeah, bro, I've been a shell back for years.
Yeah. Well, luckily I was a shell back and not a dirty wog over this last deployment. So unfortunately what comes with that is I had some extra bridge time so that other people could do it, So I was like, that's fine, but I didn't have to partake in the festivities.
It's already over. Yeah. You got that knocked out.
Like, you know what? You guys go have fun. I'll drive the ship and you guys can have stories afterwards.
Beautiful, man.
Yeah.
That was the rest of your, what other places you went with in five or?
I went to Afghan twice.
Beautiful.
Yeah. So it was convoy security team for my first deployment when I was there. And at the time, I'll never forget because, the general, I think it was General Mills or somebody, but the general out there was like basically saying, CBs were requesting and say, hey, we need to get this stuff here, blah, 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 blah. And the general at one point was like, aren't you guys CBs? Like, you build, you fight. Like, why do you need Marines to do these convoys? Like, you guys are trained. Like, you go do it, right? And that's when they really started to implement the Seabees to do the convoys there. Cause at first, like, we did a couple convoys that first deployment with like the British and just kind of going different spots, but it was never like an everyday, every week thing. Right. And then we got back from that deployment, and that's when, I don't know if everybody is familiar with how big like Camp Leatherneck is, right? But Camp Leatherneck was like the main hub in Afghanistan. But when we first got there, there was like 300 of us. Like, we were showering with TCNs, and then we were going
third country and, nationals.
Yeah, third country nationals. Right. And, you know, we're in like makeshift tents and stuff like that. So it's a very, I mean, Camp Bastion, which is attached to Leatherneck, was more established. That was the British like hospital and stuff.
Right.
But for our little establishment, it was like 300 of us. Right. And then what's unique about that is, you know, we left, and then when we came back, I remember the skipper was like, hey, enjoy your Christmas with your loved ones, because we're going back to Afghanistan. And instead of a year later when we were supposed to go to Spain,
right,
they restructured the whole battalion cycle.
What year was this?
We went right back. This was 2009 and 2010.
Oh, no. Okay, yeah.
So in 2009 and 2010, in both of those, so those 24 months, I spent 20 months in Afghanistan. I think we were only back for like 4 months. And remember, in that 4 month period that you're back, you still have to do FECs. You still have to do all the training exercises. Yep. So
you got to work up basically field exercises and field training exercises. Those are so that you're on the ready for the next battalion. Regardless of how short your home port is, there are still wickets. There are still boxes that need to be fucking checked, saying that you're ready.
Yeah.
And then there's a lot of people that did turnover. And then you have your weapons quals. That's why the weapons quals used to last 12 months, and then went down to 6. So that when everybody was qualled when they stepped off for deployment. And that was, they changed a lot of the weapons quals because of that. So that's when it gets fucking weird, man. So you did back-to-back. Did you do convoy security both times?
Or? No, so I actually became the Alpha SW.
All right, so Alpha Company is equipment, and it's SW, so you're the welder for all the heavy equipment. That's awesome, actually. That's a good freaking job.
And what's funny about that, though, is I volunteered for more convoys on the second deployment, going out with, like, hey, drive this MTVR or drive this or do this, right? I volunteered for more convoys with them just embedded with the Marines, right, than I did when I was on convoy security team. So it was pretty funny, but... I really enjoyed all the training leading up to it, though, like the convoy security team training. Like, it's a whole separate, you do your own separate FECs.
Yeah.
Your own separate group, like, during the field exercise. So when people were out there building SWA huts and all that stuff for training and stuff during FECs, like, you're just running convoys and, you know, doing different, it's a whole different training pipeline, right?
Yeah. That's cool too, 'cause you get, become your own little element. And I love that about,
well, that's why everybody liked the AirDet so much, too.
Oh, exactly. Right? Yeah. I mean, the thing that sucked about AirDet was the inspections. But at the same time, what came with the inspections and all that was the bravado. Because, like, you're like, we're the best. You know what I mean? Yeah. Realistically, not realizing that they need an E1 that's only been in for 3 fucking months. No, you're not.
Yeah.
That's part of the structure. But in your mind, you're the best. And it's true, because the tight-knit community, the tight-knit camaraderie with the smaller community.
Yeah.
That's what really helped out and is a lot more impactful, man.
Well, that's why the Seabees, just in general, like,
dude,
we're talking AirDet, but I mean, if you look at the Navy overall, the Seabees being the community they are, like, I mean, to this day, there's still a lot of Seabees that I talk to, I'm still friends with, like, no matter where I go. And it's, you know, I was sad to, like, go, right? Because I truly enjoyed it. And I enjoyed the people. I felt like I was getting stagnant, you know, like I had to, I'm the personality that's got to keep moving, keep doing things, keep going. I don't like doing the same thing over and over again. So.
Right. And then with the way things were working too, because I was there, like with your career path, it was, they're squeezing CVs out.
Yeah.
And that's when they're like starting to put people to bees to badges and basically, it's like, all right, we're getting rid of steel, or we're getting rid of some CBs, and then badges means you're going to be basically Navy police MAs, as we call them. And then they were like trying to squeeze you out. And I remember you really want to be like a dog handler.
Because
that was like your goal. You're like, I want to like do this. And I was like, oh, that's cool. It's like, you know, you qual all that. And then you and was it Emmerich?
Yeah.
My other cats.
Lines,
were, yeah. Yeah. Like you guys were both in Texas together, and it was neat. Make E6 and you're like, well, here I am.
Well, I made E6 as, you know, I made SW1 when I was in Hawaii, and the detailer at the time was like, hey, we really want to keep you as an SW1. Like, we want to keep you here. And I'm like, dude, I just went through a nightmare to make first class.
Right.
You know, and granted, I made first class at 9.5 years, which in the CBs, that's okay. Right. Mm-hmm. And a lot of my friends that, you know, we were E5s together, whatever, they're all, you know, I see them all making chief and senior chief. So congratulations, you guys. But basically, you know, I didn't know about my outcome at the time. Mm-hmm. I was like, after four cycles trying to make E6 where the final multiple was 999.99. And yeah, I'm like,
it was insane.
I'm like, dude, like you could sit there like, why am I busting ass? Why am I doing this stuff for, you know, for these EPE vows, right?
Right.
For what? Like, it's backbreaking work to maintain that level of standard over and over and over and over again. And I'm not saying that, you know, you can't. It's just, there's some, if you're doing that at work, then your home or your school or something, there's going to be something there that's missing that you're not able to pay attention to because you're devoting so much to work. Right.
Right.
And that level is just so hard to maintain. You know, got to have that life and work balance. So.
It's kind of like I look at it like a roller coaster. Like, you already got up to the top and you're looking down. You're about ready to we're ready to launch. Yeah. Or, hey, do you want to keep climbing? No, fuck that.
Yeah.
I'm ready to go. And that is the trajectory you took was with the MA.
Well, unfortunately, my career has been always going up.
Yeah.
Because not necessarily talking about, you know, rank structure, but like every single time it's like, hey, cross rate to MA, start from the basics
and right.
get promoted, you know, through the, you know, get qualified. Right. And then you become a watch commander or whatever. And then I was a watch commander over on Coronado, did that work. And I, you know, honestly, like my degree's in forensic science. So that was like, oh, this is going to be a good leg over. Yeah, right. Yeah. And you know, MA just wasn't, it's not my personality, man. Like I can't sit there and write parking tickets. I don't like giving speeding tickets. Like I'm the first one to speed, and I'm going to be the last person to write you a ticket for speeding. And that's just not my personality. Right. So
I remember coming and visiting you one time. You're like, man, I can't write tickets. I got a headlight that's out. One of the vehicles. You're like, how hypocritical would it be for me to write people tickets right now? Yeah. My headlight's out.
I mean, it's a job that's needed. And, you know, obviously, you know, it's a very dangerous job for a lot of people. And, you know, I'm all for, you know, getting, you know, people that are driving drunk, you know, processing DUIs. Like, I'm all for that. But somebody's running a little bit late to their medical appointment. Like, you know, like, I don't know. I just have my own personal feelings about that. But, you know, like,
I remember I was in C school. I was in steelworker C school. So I was in SW2 living in base housing in Port Hueneme. And I was going just a little fast, and the cops were behind me, but I didn't want to be UA. So I just drove all the way to where my muster was, and then I got out. I waved at everybody so you knew I wasn't late, and then I got my ticket.
That's great. That's pretty funny.
So you get to the MA thing, and then which is awesome because you stayed on the same base. Same area. I mean, not base.
Well, I was in Hawaii when I picked up for MA, though.
Oh, okay. Yeah. No.
When I transferred to
what I'm saying,
officer,
when you came here as a, so you're in Hawaii, and then you picked up, you got that gig, then you went to school, and then you came out here, and then you applied for the officer program here in Coronado, or not Coronado, but here in
San Diego,
here in San Diego. And then you got picked up for officer here in San Diego.
Right.
And then, that's pretty much where we started, you know, which is cool.
Yeah.
And, full circle.
Yeah.
So you got picked up for that, and then now you're staying here for another tour. So that's awesome, man. And you got a baby on the way. You guys think about names yet or no?
Yeah, his name's going to be Zephin.
Zephin?
Yeah.
All right.
Zephin William Stimson.
William Stimson. If you need a godfather, I'm right down the road. I'm sure you got 50 million of those, man. Hey, if there's anything you could tell your former self or somebody just listening to this that might be beneficial, what would you say?
I would say to, especially if you're still in, that make sailors your priority.
A
lot of things that are, you know, moving around, moving parts, mission, right? But our number one resource in the Navy is the sailors, right? And on top of that, sailors come and go. And it's important as leadership, in my opinion, to reach out to the sailors, even if they get out of the Navy, and say, hey, how are you doing?
Yeah.
And let them know that they weren't just a person that was working for you at an increment in time, right? You truly want to be involved in it, you know, sailors' lives and be impactful. And it's definitely difficult. It's tough because sometimes that the job gets in the way of that. So, you know, just do the best you can and reach out. And, you know, whatever, if you're in right now and you're thinking about getting out, you know, life doesn't end there, right? So just know that it's not the end of the world. Like, people aren't going to treat you different because you decide to get out of the Navy or whatever. So that, and then lastly, you know, if you're in a position of leadership, whether that be, you know, on the enlisted side, you know, as a, you know, leadership starts at all levels, but if you're, you know, it chief officer, first class, senior E5, whatever, just, you know, make sure you keep that in the back of your mind, as you're going about through your career, and, always utilize your resource in the best way you can.
Yeah. People forget like what it was like when you first showed up as an E1.
Yeah.
And how impactful that guy that's been there, a gal that's been there for 6 months.
Oh, yeah.
Because in the back of your head, they've been there for 50 years. Yeah. You know what I mean? That, oh, they've been here for six days? Oh, my goodness. They're so much further than us. You know? So it's all levels, man. All levels, you're impactful. And if it wasn't for that, I wouldn't be down here right now and, you know, like hanging with you. And then I frogged Jonathan Ralph yesterday. And, you know, and you see all the people that you've impacted and people that have impacted you over time, it never ends. It never fucking ends. It's not like a 7-Eleven job where you're like, okay, I'm hanging up the apron. I'm getting the fuck out of here.
Yeah.
It's like, this is for us life. You're developing people and they're developing you. You know what
and
I mean?
It's so, almost more important to talk to people after they get out. Because, I mean, mentally it's going to be a struggle, you know, and they need to know that people are there for them. And the closest people they got are the people they were just with, you know? So
I'm glad you're acknowledging that now, because like, for me personally, like my buddy Sean Halpin, he's a comic, was a Marine, and I was on a show called Make It Halpin, you know?
Yeah.
And he was telling me about, oh, I'm going to miss it. And I'm like, fuck no, dude. I like, I already missed it. Yeah. I've missed it because it's changed so much in the last 3 years. But it's true. You know, it's just like, there's so many people that are out there, and after they get out, they forgot. They were very significant to everybody. Anything else, brother?
No.
All right. Looks like we'll wrap then. Okay. So for all those I followed, thanks for making me a better leader. For all those I led, thanks for making me a better person. Keep your chin up. Never let the bastards get you down. Fuck the bozos. Never, ever forget. Obi loves you. And this is Will Stimson. Find him at, what's your Instagram?
GoRuck034.
Boom. Find him there. If you have questions, he'll answer them. We'll send you funny memes. All right. Much love. Many thanks. Let's cue that CB song.